Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
V Award for Perseverance. Kelly's been diagnosed with cancer 3 times in the last 5 years, and the Hall of Fame quarterback becomes the second former Bills player to receive the award. Former tight end Kevin Everett was honored in 2008. Around the NFL, after 11 seasons that featured 11 Pro Bowl appearances and one Super Bowl championship, Darrelle Revis has decided to call it a career. Revis released a statement on Instagram Wednesday announcing he's retiring from the NFL, and he finishes his career with 29 interceptions. After acquiring wide receiver Brandon Cooks in an offseason trade with the Patriots, the Los Angeles Rams have extended Cooks' contract days before the start of training camp. It's a reported 5-year extension worth $81 million. Cardinals general manager Steve Keim was jailed last Tuesday evening after pleading guilty to extreme DUI. He's scheduled to be released on Thursday, but this follows his July 4th arrest on suspicion of driving under the influence. The Cardinals have suspended Keim for 5 weeks and fined him $200,000. The Jacksonville Jaguars have signed their first-round pick, the 29th overall pick, defensive tackle Taven Bryan. He inks his rookie deal a week before the Jags report to camp. This now leaves 10 first-round picks unsigned, including Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen. A big trade in the NBA, the Spurs have agreed to trade Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green to the Toronto Raptors for DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, and a 2019 first-round draft pick. Kawhi only appeared in 9 games last week with the Spurs due to a quadriceps injury he suffered during the 2017 playoffs. And finally, in baseball, the Bison's wrapping up a 3-game set with the Norfolk Tides. The first pitch was at 1 o'clock, and currently in the fourth inning, it is 2-2, and that is your sports update. We are pleased now to be joined by former Buffalo Bill, current NFL Network analyst and writer for NFL.com. I played for five teams in a 5-year career in the National Football League, Bucky Brooks. Bucky, Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown, thanks for coming on with us, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on,
Sebby. Hey, man, talk a little bit about, I was interested, and I know this is a big undertaking, you picked like top rookies on both sides of the football and gave us your best case, worst case scenarios for all 10 of these guys. And give us a little idea of maybe what are some of the surprising findings you have when you started to dig into what could happen to some of these early rookies in their, and I know it's all conjecture, you know, nothing, you know, we don't know anything that happens to these guys for sure, but what are some of the surprising things you uncovered in researching this article about the best case, worst case scenario for these guys?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing that makes it hard to project what players are going to do. So many quarterbacks in uncertain situations. Never before have we seen so many rookies that are drafted high that may or may not be thrown into the starting lineup. The trend of late has been to draft a young quarterback, put him immediately onto the field, see what he can do the first year, then build a team around him in year two. But what you're hearing from some of these situations, those rookie quarterbacks may not be rushed onto the field. So it kind of leads you to wonder, how much will they play as first-year players?
It would seem to me, though, that if any of them have a good shot, it's probably Rosen in Arizona, who I know impressed the heck out of the coaching staff there in the spring, you know, just with his football acumen and processing stuff out on the field, seeing it early, delivering the football with confidence and consistency. Is that part of the reason why you have his passing numbers, you know, among the highest of the group in this class?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you look at that situation kind of plays out where he might end up being the starting quarterback at some point, not necessarily because he's more talented than Sam Bradford at this stage, but just based on Sam Bradford's history. He's had a tough time being on the field and being available for 16 games. When you hear the conversation coming out of Arizona, you talk to the officials, they say, look, the kid has been more impressive than we thought. He handled the offense very, very easily. He was very impressive when he was running a no-huddle offense. If it wasn't for the fact that Sam Bradford had more experience than him, I would say that they were probably feel very, very comfortable rolling out Josh Rosen as a day one starter.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think about because there is so much riding on these young quarterbacks. It was a big draft. I think it was the most exciting offseason for a long time because there was a lot of hype about, and there's both a lot of positives and a lot of negatives about each of these quarterbacks. And one of the other things about it was that you go down further in the draft, guys like Saquon Barkley, Bradley Chubb, guys like that who were passed over because of the quarterback situation, those guys were looked at as like more can't-miss talents coming out of college. So what about their upside and their downside? What are the chances that we see a Bradley Chubb or a Saquon Barkley actually explode onto the scene and really do the kind of things that their physical ability would suggest?
I think this draft could be very, very similar to the 2011 draft. That draft was the one where Cam Newton went first, but then I want to say 11 of the picks after that all earned Pro Bowl berths. That's the Marcel Darius, Devon Miller, Patrick Peterson, J.J. Watt. All those guys came and performed at a very, very high level. When you look at the position players in this draft, Bradley Chubb, Saquon Barkley, they had blue-chip talent written all over them. They were the kind of guys that in most draft classes, they would be the number one overall pick. But for whatever reason, teams elected to take the gamble and go for the quarterbacks, and now we'll have to see how that plays out as it goes down the line. I think the quarterbacks were a little more uncertain than the position players, but we'll see because it's easy to make that determination when you don't have a quarterback under center.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's easy to when you're drafting a little bit for need, you're also drafting a little bit to to try and roll the dice a little bit, but you're also trying to take the best player available. And when you slice it, and when there's four or five players at that spot at the quarterback, which is such an important position, how you not only how you evaluate those five guys, but also how you think other teams are going to evaluate them in that draft class becomes paramount. It's like a spy novel. Trying to figure out who's going to take who and who's going to trade up to get to that spot. So I thought this was one of the most, like you said, since 2011, I think this was one of the most intriguing drafts in its strategies that we've seen in recent memory.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the thing about it, there are many different ways that you can build your team. And I know the league has become more of a passing league. Everyone is obsessed with finding the young quarterback and having the right coordinator to go with them. But if you're unsure about the quarterback, you can never go wrong taking good players. And we have seen that teams that have really good players on the perimeter can elevate the play of a quarterback that may be a mid-level quarterback. We saw that last season with Case Keenum in Minnesota. We've seen countless other examples of teams loading up on skill guys, blue-chip skill guys, to elevate them. I think the thing that you have to be able to do is you have to be able to look at your roster and look at your team and kind of figure out exactly what you have. If you have an A-level quarterback, an A-level quarterback can lift up an average supporting cast. However, if you don't have an A-level quarterback, to try and surround him with B-level talent, you're only going to be an average team. You really have to do hard assessments of your own personnel when you go into the draft and make sure that you get the right guys for your team to elevate your squad.
Now, I know you just did projected stats for all these players, offense and defense, Bucky, and so naturally the first thing people are going to do, and I was as guilty of this as anybody, was look at the projected stats that you had for each of the quarterbacks, not only in terms of, you know, total production in terms of passing yards and TDs versus interceptions, but the completion rate. And, you know, obviously Josh Allen you had listed here with the lowest completion rate. You projected him at about 55%. I think Darnold was next lowest with 58%. Were you just simply projecting from college statistics there, or do you think some of the same things that maybe these guys struggled with in college could, you know, rear their ugly heads as first-year rookies?
Well, normally, it always kind of rears its ugly head. It's rare that a quarterback in college is able to come into the league right away and light it up and perform at a level that exceeds what he did in college. I think the same for Josh Allen, and even Sam Darnold to this point, but for Josh Allen has never been a 60% completion percent passer, not in high school, not in junior college, not in college. Now, you can try and build some layups into the passing game, but that's not really his game. And even in saying that, I've said that when you look at Josh Allen, I think you need to look at Cam Newton and Cam Newton's progression. Cam Newton has never really been a 60% passer. However, he has been able to be very, very productive because the offense fits his skill set, meaning that the Carolina Panthers have had a downhill running attack. They have a vertical passing game. And when you push the ball farther down the field, your completion percentage is going to come down, but you're hoping that the explosive plays offset that. I believe when you look at Josh Allen and you have the familiarity between the general manager and the head coach and a Cam Newton type, I believe that there's some synergy in terms of how they look at Josh Allen, how they look at Cam Newton, and how they plan to build this offense around this talent.
He writes for NFL.com, and he's an NFL Network analyst. He's a former Buffalo Bills wide receiver. Bucky Brooks is on One Bills Live. And Bucky, I want to switch gears for a minute. You also wrote some things about some quarterbacks who you think might have breakout season, and some about some guys you think might be overrated. And talk about Patrick Mahomes with the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs traded with the Buffalo Bills last year to jump up and get Mahomes. He sat behind Alex Smith last year, and now they've handed him the reins. And this is kind of the scenario for all these young quarterbacks we've just been talking about. The Chiefs have done it exactly in the best-case scenario of the way to bring a guy along slowly and then give him the team unfettered by dealing Alex Smith and turning it over Patrick Mahomes. No competition. Give him the team. He's had a year to learn. And you think this might be the perfect way to handle Mahomes?
Yeah, I think it may be the perfect way to handle him in a few different things. Like, one, you got rid of Alex Smith. You were able to bring some draft picks back for that. You had him sit for a year and really serve as an apprenticeship, but you gave him a start. He got a real start at the end of the season where he had the entire team. He had all the reps the last week of the season, and he went in and he performed pretty well against the Denver Broncos, led him back to a win, had a game-winning drive. You were able to watch Patrick Mahomes develop on the practice field, and then you were able to figure out, what do we need to help him play at his best? So in the offseason, they go and get another speed receiver in Sammy Watkins. So now when you look at their wide receiver core, you have Sammy Watkins, you have Tyreek Hill, you have Travis Kelce. I mean, those are three, I think you could say, B-plus, A-minus level receivers that can help them. You have a talented runner in Kareem Hunt, who also can catch the ball out of the backfield. So now what you're asking your young quarterback to do is to really be a point guard on the basketball court. Run the fast break, get the ball to the open man, and allow those guys to do the work. I think when you look at what Kansas City did, you look at what the Philadelphia Eagles and the LA Rams did a season ago, they all kind of used that model. I think that is the model that teams are going to use going forward. Play the young guy early, and then in the second year, figure out what pieces you need around him to allow him to play at a higher level.
Now, you mentioned Jared Goff, Bucky, and we know that Coach McVay had an interesting approach with him. They would call the play early so that Goff could get up to the line before the cutoff with 15 seconds on the play clock, where McVay could literally talk to him and help him through the defensive coverage that he was looking at pre-snap. With these young quarterbacks, do you anticipate a trend developing there with offensive coordinators kind of getting teams up to the line fast so they can be chatting with their young quarterback as much as possible before the play?
Oh, I think so. But, you know, the funny thing is I think that was a tactic that they stole from the New England Patriots and what Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels have been doing for years. Tom Brady has talked about you want to play faster so you can get to the line and have more information given to you. Josh McDaniels is able to feed that information in the ear. Now, thinking about the young quarterback, if you go all the way back to high school football, I coach high school football out here in L.A., that's what we do with young quarterbacks. They play at tempo, they get to the line, they bluff the signal call, then what do? They look to the sideline, the offensive coordinator barks out what they should do, and they help them go forward. Now, you originally don't like to have a quarterback play with those kind of training wheels, but if it's a part of the game and you have the ability to do that, why would you not take advantage of the rules to help your young quarterback have the edge to be able to play at a high level? I think it was brilliant for Sean McVay to do it. I know he did it before with Kirk Cousins. I think you will certainly see more offensive coordinators try to play with a little more tempo, try to encourage their guys to get in and out of the huddle faster so they can have more time to process and work with their quarterback to help them make the right decision.
Yeah, after all, they are coaches, and it's their job to help them, and why wouldn't you use the loopholes in the rules to do that? And it makes perfect sense to me. And as you talk about these young quarterbacks and how they've developed and some of the things the coordinators have done to do that, last year the 49ers got Jimmy Garoppolo midseason or early in the season, and they sat him for 4 weeks. And then finally he got a start, and in the last six games of the season they ran the table and went 6-0. And nevertheless, you might think the easy pick is to say the Niners are going to make a big leap forward. Are you not convinced of that, or are you?
You know, I think it may be tougher for them this go around. I do believe what they did with Jimmy Garoppolo was outstanding, was brilliant. To not rush him onto the field, to give him 4 or 5 weeks to really learn as much as he could of the offense before they put him out there, I think that's why he played well. I think the big thing for Jimmy Garoppolo will now be, how does he react to the way the defensive coordinators adjust to him? Now that he has 5 games on tape, and everybody's been able to pull over the tape, look at his game, look at the tendencies, look at any tails that he may have, how does he react when people adjust their coverages to take away his layups? Does he have the ability to find alternatives to attack the defense? That's the difference between being good and great in this league. Can you always adjust when the defense is adjusting? We will see that. And because I believe there will be some struggles, it will be a bit of a transition, I'm not all the way in on the San Francisco 49ers making a big jump. I do believe Jimmy Garoppolo will be a good quarterback. I just believe in that second year of starting, I think it may be a little more trying as he begins to deal with these defensive coordinators that are a little more in tune to his game, particularly within Kyle Shanahan's system.
It's kind of like baseball, you know, with a new call-up from the AAA. Yeah. You know, the pitcher comes in. Nobody's got a real scouting report on him or a feel for him, what's his out pitch and all that. And after seeing him after the first two at-bats, the third at-bat, they're like tagging the guy, and they're like, whoa, what happened there? He was cruising that first 6 innings. And it's kind of the same thing with these quarterbacks that have only been on the field for 6 or 7 games. I wanted to flip it over to the defensive side real quick, Bucky, you know, with some of these forecasts for the 11 defensive rookies you picked, because I was drawn to the comparison between Roquan Smith, the first-round pick of the Chicago Bears, and Tremaine Edmonds, the first-round pick of the Bills, their second first-round pick. And you had their stats pretty comparable. I think you gave 5 more tackles to Roquan Smith in your projection. You gave 1 more sack to Tremaine Edmonds in your projection. But their numbers largely the same, close to 100 tackles, a couple of sacks, you know, maybe a pick or two here or there. But the interesting thing for me is Smith's going to be playing inside linebacker in a 3-4 in Chicago alongside Danny Trevathan, and you've got Tremaine Edmonds as the quarterback of the defense here in Buffalo in a 4-3. Do you really see either of their production? I mean, I kind of think Tremaine Edmonds is going to be all over the field. He's going to be a 3-down guy. What do you kind of see with Roquan Smith that's going to make his numbers pretty comparable to that of Edmonds?
I think when you go back and you look at both of their games, both of these guys are disruptive playmakers. Both of them have the speed to be sideline to sideline, hit and run playmakers. I think the big thing for Roquan Smith in that 3-4 defense, I am expecting Vic Fangio to use him much like he used Patrick Willis during his time in San Francisco.
Okay.
They don't cover him up, and they're going to allow him to be the guy that really makes a ton of plays. I would expect Danny Trevathan to be the guy that is more of the plugger, kind of the Mac linebacker that kind of takes on. And they kind of allow Roquan Smith to run and chase because that's what he did really, really well at Georgia. I think for Edmonds, I think he falls into a nice situation because Sean McDermott has a blueprint for being able to take a player like that and have success. He did it with Luke Kuechly. He also had success with Thomas Davis. I believe Tremaine Edmonds, his versatility, his ability to make plays in a bunch of different capacities is going to allow him to be a star on that defense. And when you really look at that defense, particularly in the front seven, I don't know how many stars are there, but I believe he is the guy that you really can build that defense around. He is a young player. You're talking about 20 years old, still trying to find his game, but he has freakish physical attributes and athleticism. He is the perfect player to be a guy that you kind of make the face of your franchise on the defense side of the ball in Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, Bucky, I mean, we're out here watching spring practice. I mean, he's a head taller in the huddle than anybody on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a linebacker. He's like, and
he's,
you know, Lorenzo,
tall as a tree.
Lorenzo
yeah.
Alexander, who's seen a lot of football players in this league over his 12 years. I mean, he said the kid's a freak. He's an absolute freak, like ridiculous. Arms that go on for days, runs like a deer. He said he's ridiculous. So people are getting pretty hyped up about, you know, what he can be for this defense, which I think a lot of people feel is going to take another step forward.
Bucky, I got to ask you a question, too. You listed all these top draft picks on the defensive side of the ball as rookies, and I want to ask you about one in particular. The first cornerback taken by the Browns, Denzel Ward. I mean, last year we had Marshawn Lattimore explode onto the scene in New Orleans, Tre'Davious White here in Buffalo, two of the top corners in the league last year as rookies. And then, of course, the young guy, Jalen Ramsey, also. They're all under 25 years old. They're all really young. Does Cleveland find the same thing in Denzel Ward? What kind of player is he going to be as the top corner taken?
When you talk to the coaches up there, they believe he's special. They believe the guy has an opportunity to be kind of an all-star difference maker right away. He's going to take on the challenge of having to handle the number one receiver. He may get an opportunity to shadow those guys right away, which is unheard of for a first-year player. He's smooth. He's fluid. He's athletic. He's very, very passionate about the game. I had an opportunity to speak to him a couple of weeks ago. I was at an event in Dallas. And, look, he's wired the right way. And I think the common denominator between all the guys that you mentioned, Ramsey, Tre'Davious White, these guys are very, very passionate about football. They played a lot of football coming up. They're really into the preparation part of it, and that is going to give them an opportunity to have a lot of success. I'm really excited about the corners that are in the league today, the young guys in particular. All of these guys have the length, the versatility, and a varied toolbox that allows them to use a bunch of different techniques to be the kind of players that kind of own the game for a long time in their position.
One thing, last thing I'd ask you about, Bucky, and I agree with you 100% on this. You said the stuff about coming out about Le'Veon Bell, I think the CBA, when it comes up, one of the big topics and perhaps points of contention between the league and the players is going to be the franchise tag. Le'Veon Bell turned down an enormous offer from the Pittsburgh Steelers to play for $14.5 million this year. I think something's going to be done with the way players are exposed to free agency at the end of their rookie contract. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it certainly can be done. I think what's interesting about the Le'Veon Bell piece is, one, the running back position, how it's valued, the way it's been talked about in media circles has kind of diminished the way fans see that position. But, Steve, I'm very impacted by the time I spent in Buffalo and seeing Thurman and Cotton and those other guys and the impact that they can make. I think when you think about the franchise tag and the guaranteed money that players want to have, I think more players are learning how to use the leverage of the franchise tag to get these short NBA-like deals that give them a lot of money quickly, as opposed to these fluffed-out deals that really don't have a lot of guaranteed money but look much bigger than they appear when people see the deal flash across the bottom of the screen when they're watching the sports ticker.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Bucky Brooks is an NFL analyst, NFL.com writer, NFL Network analyst, former wide receiver in the National Football League, was a former teammate of mine. It's great hearing from you. You're doing great work. I love the stuff you're writing. Thanks so much for being on One Bills Live with us, Bucky.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, guys.
Bucky was a really good player, and he's one of those guys that got caught back in the days when I played trying to make a team that was going to the Super Bowl every year coming in, and it was a tough roster to make. But that guy, as you could tell from talking to him, how sharp he was and how intelligent he was. And the stuff he's talking about with these young players in the NFL and where they're playing, really interesting, because it's easy to see a best-case scenario and a worst-case scenario, but you know, too, that it's probably, for most of them, it's going to be somewhere in the middle.
Right. And the only one I didn't get a chance to ask him about was Tremaine's brother, who's going to be playing three hours down the road in Pittsburgh as a safety. You know, he's coming in there, and we kind of know how things work in Pittsburgh. Like, and he wrote it. I mean, you got to earn your way on the field under Tomlin, and he doesn't just plug any rookie into the lineup unless they're exceptional.
Right.
You know, they made him a first-round pick, but, you know, he's got a veteran – at safety and at free safety and Morgan Burnett in front of him. But if he comes on and can be the playmaker that they're looking for in center field, you know, there's a chance he could get on the field before his rookie year is out and kind of unseat Morgan Burnett. You know, Sean Davis is a good, strong safety for them, and they're really missing that playmaker now after the Ryan Shazier spinal cord injury last year. They need somebody to really kind of step up and be that difference maker in the middle of their defense. For years, it was Polamalu,
right?
And then Shazier had kind of stepped into that playmaker.
Shazier was a linebacker,
leading
hybrid
type
kind
role,
of guy.
Yeah.
And he was able to stay on the field for different situations very fast. It was one of those new linebackers, and you saw it in the playoffs last year. The Jacksonville Jaguars, they've got linebackers that are built like strong safeties, but
right.
They can fly. They can really scoot.
And if you look at the back seven for the Steelers right now, there really isn't that guy in their defense. And you have to believe that the Steelers are hoping, maybe not as a rookie, but eventually Tremaine Edmonds' brother, Terrell, can step into that kind of a role and be that kind of a difference maker in the back seven for their defense.
It's probably going to be a pretty good Christmas for the Edmonds household with Terrell and Tremaine being picked in the first round of the NFL draft.
And their brother, Trey, is a reserve running back in New Orleans. That's a ridiculous family,
What
man.
Is the deal?
What's in the water down
nice,
there?
Though. All right, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker on One Bills Live. We're going to come back at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk NFL true-false of One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. We'll be right back from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. New York's artisan cheese. Okay, Brownie, here we go. We got three of these. We'll try to get to all of them. Outside of quarterbacks, NFL's true false. Outside of quarterbacks, Ezekiel Elliott is the most indispensable offensive player in the National Football League. Would you like to go first? Or do you want me to?
I'll go first. I'm going to say false.
All right. Now this is outside of the quarterbacks, so it's not like
we're not counting quarterbacks,
right?
Right. No, I get it. I could come up with two or three that I would list before him.
Give me two.
I would go Antonio Brown.
Okay. On the cover of Madden, as we talked about earlier.
And let me see. Probably. See, because here's the thing. When you're thinking about indispensable, you're not only thinking about who that guy is as a performer on the field
sure.
for his respective team.
It's what around him.
You're also thinking, what's left if he's not there?
Yeah.
I'm going LeSean McCoy.
Oh, that's a good one. I hadn't even thought about it as a Bills, from a Bills perspective.
I'll go Antonio Brown and LeSean McCoy.
I would say that as well.
Those are two that are more indispensable.
My two guys would be, now I'm going to change one of mine, because you have to LeSean McCoy. The other one is Leonard Fournette, because Blake Bortles is at best a placeholder.
Yeah.
I think Leonard Fournette down in Jacksonville is, and I've seen the guy play. He's unbelievable. In fact, if you gave me Ezekiel Elliott and Leonard Fournette, I'd take Leonard Fournette.
And here's the thing, too, that's different this year in comparison to last year for the Jags, because there were a couple of weeks where Fournette was out of the lineup with that ankle problem, or he wasn't nearly the player that he was because he was playing hurt down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
They had Chris Ivory last year,
right,
who is a similar type power back, and he's not there now. Yes, they have the other kid that came out of Alabama whose name's escaping me right now down there who runs for them. Yeldon.
Yeah.
TJ Yeldon. So they have Yeldon, which,
he's never
not a huge drop off, but not the same guy. I would say Ivory is more like Fournette, than Yeldon is.
Yeah.
And Ivory is not there anymore. He's here in Buffalo.
In style, you're right. But now Leonard Fournette is a man among boys. So we both go false for outside of the quarterbacks. Ezekiel is the most indispensable offensive player in the National Football League. Number two, NFL true false. Seahawks are poised for the NFL's biggest fall from grace. And for me, and I guess I'll go first on this one, now, I think that's false. There's no question that they're going to be a different football team. The Legion of Boom is gone. They're not going to win games the way they did once by dominating defense, almost suffocating defense. In fact, in their Super Bowl win against the Denver Broncos, in my opinion, it is the greatest defensive performance in a Super Bowl of all time.
Better than Bears 85?
Absolutely much better than the Bears of 85.
Why?
Defensive performance in them. Because of this. The Bears in 85 won that game 35-10 against the New England.
46-10.
36-10.
46-10.
46.
It's 46-10.
46-10 against the New England Patriots.
Yeah.
Who at that time had the 16th ranked offense in the National Football League in 1985. The Legion of Boom in Seattle in Super Bowl 40
something. I
that
never
Super
remember
Bowl
the Roman
against
numerals.
They played against Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos, who were the greatest offense in all history, and they crushed them. It was not even a contest.
Okay.
The Seattle Seahawks beat to a pulp the statistically best offense in the history of the NFL. They were record-breaking that year, and they had no shot in that Super Bowl. That's why I think that the Seattle Seahawks have the best – we're getting off topic here. That's why I think they were the best defensive performance of all time in the Super Bowl. They're going to experience – the true-false question was they're going to experience the biggest fall from grace. I don't think they're going to fall that far.
They were 9-7 last year.
They're going to win games.
Like, how much further are they falling? You know what I mean?
Right. They're going to win games differently, no question. They're going to be a different football team. They're not going to win it with defense, but they're going to win. Russell Wilson gives them a chance. The rest of their players on their offense and their defense, they're going to play all right. Pete Carroll's got a program there. They are going to look different. They're not going to have a suffocating defense, but they're not going to fall all that far.
I mean, here's the thing. I got to say false, too, because would you be surprised if the Seahawks make the playoffs?
Not at all.
I wouldn't either. So how can you call it a fall from grace if they can still be a playoff team?
They got a playmaking, consistent quarterback.
You got Rashad Penny, the running back I talked about. I like him a lot.
Yep.
I like him a lot. I think he's going to be productive for them.
Now they're in a division with the Rams, who jumped out of the blocks last year. An Arizona team that's in the – you got to say that the Arizona team's got a huge question mark on it because of their quarterback. And, of course, then you've got the 49ers with Jimmy Garoppolo, who, you know, they've still got some pieces to put in. Despite the finish they had last year, it's like we said, they're going to catch up with Garoppolo.
What I'm trying to do –
it's going to be all right.
Yeah, what I'm trying to do is find another team who is more likely to fall from grace this year based on what they did last year.
I mean, I don't know.
I'm having a hard time. There's no easy pick here.
You could say Tennessee. You could say
But Tennessee is 9-7.
Right. Like, the only teams that are poised like that, you got to pick a team like Minnesota, who was stratospheric last year. You got to pick a team like the Jaguars, who got to the playoffs and won that division. You know, they could take a step backwards if things don't fall their way, if their defense gets some injuries or something like that. But Atlanta maybe could fall down, but I don't think they will.
They were only 10-6.
Listen,
I mean,
yeah, the Seahawks lost some star defensive players, but man, oh man, they're still a pretty good football team. So I think we're both say false.
I'm definitely saying false. The challenge I'm trying to come up with here is
who else?
If it's not the Seahawks, then who would you put in that spot?
I don't think the Steelers are going anywhere. They won the AFC North.
Want to say the Chiefs because they have a rookie quarterback, but even they were only 10-6 and won the West last year.
Yeah.
Maybe I would say, man, and they got an awful lot of talent on offense.
And Green
Bay
was a down
year. Would you say Jacksonville? Like Bortles doesn't do as well?
Jacksonville, because they look to be the team that has struggled to score points, although in the division round they hung 48 points on the Steelers. It's hard to – there aren't those teams that seem poised to drop. Now, certainly – if the Seahawks go 8-8 and they take a step backwards one game, that's still not a drop.
Yeah,
you know, there's
maybe Baltimore at 9-7. Maybe they really struggle this year. They turn the page from Flacco halfway through. They give up the ship and turn to
But you can't that
Jackson.
That's maybe. I see the you can see where the question's coming from. The Seahawks are.
I just don't think there's an easy answer here of a team that's just going to precipitously drop off the face of the earth.
Maybe that's why they picked the Seahawks to say that about, because nobody else seems to be, you know, poised like they are. But I still say it's false.
I do too.
All right. Now, number three, NFL true and false. James Harrison tops the craziest off-season workouts. And I don't know if you've kept up with this. And there's stuff going on all the time where these guys are now.
They're Instagramming their workouts.
Yeah, they put stuff out on their workouts. You got guys doing.
They do it in college.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, they got the guys in there doing spring workouts and deadlifting.
Crazy workouts.
You know, 700 pounds and squatting 395.
He's 39 years old. He's powerlifting. Doing some stuff. He upped his powerlifting game a few years ago. This stuff he's doing with 675 pounds, putting it across his. Now listen, he's putting it across his stomach, and then like doing planks with it, or reverse.
Yeah, reverse planks.
Oh my gosh, doing lunges with just unbelievable weight.
Yeah, I'm not in the business of this. I'm big on lifting my own body weight. Like I'll do.
The only time I lift my own body weight is when I stand up.
No, but like I'd rather do push-ups and pull-ups, you know, those kinds of things instead of doing this stupid weight. Because whenever I try to do any of this Olympic lifting and certainly I'm not doing anything that James Harrison is doing for our MSG viewers. Oh, my God, a medicine ball just snapped out of his chain.
Strap of medicine ball. Standing on him, that's like.
Yeah, I'm not in the business of doing that. I never have.
I don't know. I might say it's true, though.
Anything from a push jerk to, you know, a hang and clean, I'm not doing any of that.
You got guys
stuff.
Doing all kinds of crazy. It starts with T.O. running a 4.5 40 at 44 years old.
I think he ran a 4.44, right?
Okay, 4.44. You've got these guys. Saquon Barkley's got a couple of videos out there where he leans down, lifts 315 pounds off the floor straight up, drops it back down. Before he moves his feet, he does a 48-inch or 44-inch vertical box jump.
Box jump.
Right. So
I've seen J.J. Watt do like a 55-inch box jump. Now, fortunately for him, he's smart enough to go to the soft padded boxes.
Right.
Because
anything can happen.
I'm just going to tell you, I've witnessed people bite the box, as they say.
Oh, yeah.
Where you don't get your feet up on the top. Biting the box.
It's supposed to look easy.
Leaves
it ain't easy.
Scars on people's shins. Scars. Do not bite the box.
Yeah, and you've also seen guys do all this crazy workout stuff where even this James Harrison, he also has a thing where he's got a rubber band around his back. So, like, he's laying on a bench press and pushing up.
And
then
he's got
a 150-pound dumbbell in each hand.
I saw that one.
He's benching 300 pounds with resistance around his back. I'm like, how do you?
He was playing.
That's so far out of the realm of possibility. Yeah. I couldn't even dream of even trying to do it or using it as a test.
I saw another video with Harrison doing this volleyball game where he's throwing a medicine ball over to the other side and the other guy's got to catch it and throw it back. Like, that's the game they're playing.
Yeah.
So he's heaving this, like an old school Scotsman.
Right.
You know, some of those,
like the
what do they call
throw,
those?
The pole throw.
The Highland Games.
Yeah, the Highland Games.
So
yeah.
You know how they.
I know exactly what you mean.
You know how they get those long telephone poles and they, like, have to throw them up in the air and flip them so it lands on the opposite end? Some of these guys will throw these, like, kegs over their shoulder and over a wall behind them.
I've seen that.
So he's taken that approach with volleyball. He's got his back to the net. He's got, like, a 100-pound medicine ball heaving over his shoulder to the other side. The other guy's got to run like a center fielder, catch the thing, turn around and flip it back to him the same way. These guys are nuts. Like, you got to – dude, sit down. You know, have an iced tea in the sun on your back porch. Like, what?
That's a trip to the emergency room for me, man.
My back would be like, yeah, I don't think so, buddy.
That would be, yeah, that's.
I'd be in traction.
Oh, man, I can't.
And I'm in okay shape.
And you know what? I get it. I mean, James Harrison's 39 or 38 years old. It's not like he was like these 22-year-old guys, like Saquon Barkley, all fresh-legged coming out of there. But
yeah, like. You're playing in the NFL. You kind of have to do some of that stuff.
So we both say, I think I got to say yes. James Harrison, just really because you saw the thing.
Yeah, I'll say true because there's.
Because it's prolific. He's got like 50 of these videos coming out of him doing this stuff.
I'm just going to say
one.
I'm just going to say true because anybody who's still motivated to that degree to do that kind of lifting after a 15-year NFL career, I'll tip my hat to you. So, yeah, I'll say true.
All right, that's NFL True False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Steve Tasker, along with Chris Browns, we've been talking about all stuff all around the league. We kind of, because of our guests Bucky Brooks and Eric Winston, we kind of strayed away from our Twitter question, which was which AFC quarterback has the most pressure going into training camp, and that goes all the way down the depth chart of all four in AFC East teams. You see, and the people on MSG can see it. The Buffalo Bills have A.J. McCarron, Nathan Peterman, Josh Allen. The Dolphins have got Tannehill, Brock Osweiler, Bryce Petty, and David Fales. Fales actually played last year. The Jets have got Josh McCown, Teddy Bridgewater, and Darnold, of course. And the Patriots, Tom Brady, Brian Hoyer, and Danny Etling. I'm pretty sure Danny Etling has zero pressure on him this training camp.
I would go with zero. Yeah, right? Who's got the least pressure?
Danny Etling of the New England Patriots.
Etling probably has the least. Of course, there's a chance he doesn't even make the roster and he's on the practice squad. Because even guys like Bryce Petty and David Fales, those two guys are fighting to be the third quarterback. So there's some element of pressure there.
They just want to be a quarterback.
But, you know, as we said earlier, there's different kinds of pressure on this list because, you know, Teddy Bridgewater is trying to prove he can still be a productive guy that can stay healthy and his mobility hasn't been too compromised by that near-catastrophic knee injury. Brock Osweiler is still trying to stay in the league. Ryan Tannehill's trying to prove he can still be a starter. A.J. McCarron is trying to prove he can be a starting quarterback in the league. And Brady's trying to prove that you can still play at an elite level at age 41.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're bringing it down the home stretch. We've got one more segment before we get to the top of the hour. We're going to come back and say and realize what have we learned right after this. One Bills Live from from Buffalo Bills Radio.
What did we
learn
today? Did we learn anything? I don't know.
WGR Sports Radio 550.
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater and the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We were on with Eric Winston, the president of the National Football League Players Association, and he talked about what was coming up on the horizon for the collective bargaining agreement. Here's what he said.
Most of our conversations, well, pretty much all of the conversations have been internal. First of all, we've got to understand what the players want, and I think that's important. We got to make sure that those players are heard and that that we go to these teams and that we're asking these guys exactly, hey, what do you see? This is what we're seeing. How does your specific situation fall into this? And we're going to try to work this thing out, and hopefully it's sooner than later, and that'd be great for everybody. But at the end of the day, that's got to be the right deal. And I can't put a timeline on something like that. I can't tell you if something is or isn't going to happen because, as you know, sometimes that stuff is taken out of our hands.
That was Eric Winston, current NFL Players Association president. We also had Bucky Brooks on, NFL Network analyst. He had to talk about the young quarterbacks in the league and the big draft class that it was. He also talked about Buffalo's 7th overall pick, Josh Allen, and some of the things that were said about his completion percentage. Here's what Bucky had to say.
Josh Allen has never been a 60% completion percent passer, not in high school, not in junior college, not in college. Now, you can try and build some layups into the passing game, but that's not really his game. And even in saying that, I've said that when you look at Josh Allen, I think you need to look at Cam Newton and Cam Newton's progression. Cam Newton has never really been a 60% passer. However, he has been able to be very, very productive because the offense fits his skill set, meaning that the Carolina Panthers have had a downhill running attack. They have a vertical passing game. And when you push the ball farther down the field, your completion percentage is going to come down, but you're hoping that the explosive plays offset that. I believe when you look at Josh Allen and you have the familiarity between the general manager and the head coach and a Cam Newton type, I believe that there's some synergy in terms of how they look at Josh Allen, how they look at Cam Newton, and how they plan to build this offense around this talent.
That was What Have We Learned, presented by Advanced Alarms. And we've been on the show today. I've been hosting with Chris Brown of the BuffaloBills.com, and we haven't had a chance to take too many calls. We have a queue going on. I want to take one call before we call it a day. This is Tom in Lancaster. Tom, you're on One Bills Live. Thanks for being so patient with me, Tom. What's on your mind?
I was just wondering, there's still, like, I don't know, 8-10 first-round draft choices that haven't signed yet. If there's a salary scale and everybody's slotted, it's been 3 months. Is there something afoot to mess with the CBA or something? What's the deal?
That's a good question. I think it's starting to get time to. Thanks for the call, Tom. I appreciate it. It's starting to get time to start thinking about that. 10 guys left, though, and it used to be that when it was all freewheeling and there were nothing said, it was like, you know, wait your turn. I think there's still a little bit of that that goes on.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I'm not – I don't think – I mean, there's too much time before this new CBA coming up where I think people are going to get all bent out of shape now. You know, like Eric Winston said when we talked to him, there have been a lot of internal conversations.
Right.
But there have been no conversations with the league yet. So really, what this run-up time is going to be about is game planning. The NFLPA is going to have their game plan. The league's going to have their game plan with ownership. They probably have their own committee.
Right.
You know, among NFL ownership.
What about getting Josh Allen signed for the Buffalo Bills?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not terribly worried about it. I really am not. I think we've got a situation here where it's going to get done. Guys are going to get slotted. Josh Rosen already signed a while back in May, I want to say, or early June. And he got picked after Allen. He was the next quarterback off the board after Allen, I think. The contract parameters are largely set. So I just think it's a matter of ironing out some of that minor language,
right,
you know, that exists with incentives and such.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Tomorrow, we've got NASCAR driver Clint Bowyer coming on the show. Lorenzo Alexander is going to join us. And also, Chris Brown, you're off the hook. You don't have to come in tomorrow. You know who's
I got enough work to do.
That's right, yeah.
Leading
you know
up to
who's
going to
co-host with me tomorrow is Andrew Peters of the Instigators. He's hanging around for an extra few hours.
That's going to be interesting.
So we're going to have the football and hockey cocktail going. George Blas, Jeff Koltenek, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Chirito, and, of course, Jay Harris. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. That is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.